And what is the name of your poster?
It's copper binding to the prion protein. Is it linked with the pathogenesis of certain prion diseases?
Now, what's the interest in copper?
Well, depending on who you ask, it's mixed. There's some indications that copper binding to the prion protein may be important for the normal function of the cellular form of the prion protein. PRPC certainly has lots of other molecules that it interacts with, but there's some conserved regions in PRPC that can bind copper specifically over other metals. And where the prion protein is highly expressed, which is, it's usually found on the exterior surface of synapses, that environment also has copper being released during signaling events into the synaptic junction.
Well, what role does copper play in the normal body?
Well, anything from energy production in cells to part of the body's host defenses against oxidative stress. So it's found ubiquitously in pretty well all tissues, all living organisms need copper for survival.
With the research that you're doing, what exactly are you doing?
So, a lot of my work that went into this poster is computational work. So doing essentially quantum mechanical calculations. It's something called density functional theory. It takes into account all the electrons in the system, so we can do very detailed modeling of how copper binds to the protein. The other side of that is molecular dynamic simulations, where we treat the electrons in an implicit fashion, but then we can model huge pieces of the protein, lots of atoms, and look at what kind of structure copper can induce in the prion protein.
What have you found out?
We found a number of things. Some of our early work, which was looking at multiple atoms of copper binding to the prion protein, we find that the N-terminal domain, where those copper binding sites are, we find that part of the protein can fold or be induced to fold by copper. The copper binding sites sort of stack up on top of one another, and each of those individual copper binding sites is redox silent, so you don't get any reduction of copper 2 to copper 1, which is the event that's normally associated with triggering oxidative damage in tissues. So the prion protein's binding a redox silent form of copper and then essentially sort of wrapping up all those copper binding sites into a little bundle and sequestering it from solvent. So again, we think it's a neuroprotective effect. Some of our other work is looking at an alternate form of copper binding to the prion protein, which is the so-called low occupancy form. When the copper concentration is low, the prion protein won't bind multiple equivalents of copper. It can bind a single atom of copper, and that form is actually redox active. So copper can actually be reduced to copper 1, and we've done some protein folding simulations. We find that what people think of as normally flexible and unstructured N-terminal domain, those octorepeats, the parts that are conserved for binding copper, do actually have a globular structure in the absence of metal, and it's already pre-folded into a site suitable for binding a single atom of copper. Some of the other work we've done with other parts of the protein is looking at the effects of that redox activity. We've shown there's sort of two potential mechanisms that if you have a redox event take place, that the N-terminal domain of the protein can be cleaved, and you lose those copper binding octorepeats. But there's actually 6 histidines in the human prion protein, and you lose 4 of them when that oxidative cleavage event happens. The other 2 histidines are still there. They're still in this sort of the little fragment of the N-terminal domain that's left. They can still bind copper. And in some of our simulations, we actually show that a single atom of copper bridging those 2 histidines can induce beta sheet formation in that part of the protein.
So what's the significance of this? Does this mean that you found one of those pieces of the puzzle that explains why these prions misfold?
I'd like to say yes. Possibly. Really, I'm certainly not trying to tell people that all prion diseases can be caused by copper. But in certain instances where the prion protein may be predisposed to oxidative damage and losing those copper-binding octa-repeats, in those instances, if copper can still bind to those histidines that are left behind, if you can get any, even a small amount of beta sheet formation nucleated in that N-terminal tail, if it can propagate into the rest of the N-terminal domain, that may actually be a way to drive misfolding in this part of the protein. So again, you need some initial event or circumstances to have that oxidative cleavage event happen. And then you need this misfolding event mediated by copper. This is, you know, relatively difficult to do with simulations. These are big models, and there may very well be an energetic barrier to get over, which would mean that, you know, if we were to see this happening in a real brain, if that were possible, this would probably be a very long event. There'd be a long incubation time. You'd need this happening over a long period to actually get any large amount of the misfolded pathogenic isoform built up. But certainly we think we've got a hypothesis that copper may be able to induce misfolding in the prion protein.
So what do you have to do next?
Bigger simulations. For this kind of stuff, it's very difficult to do with animal models, careful controls, wet lab work. A lot of this side of my work is purely computational. If somebody else would like to do it, I'm perfectly okay with that too, because this is sort of self-funded research, because I'm just a postdoc. The next thing is obviously to take this small fragment of nucleated beta sheet formation by copper with the rest of the C-terminal domain of the prion protein and see whether or not that beta sheet formation can actually propagate into the rest of the protein, and then see if we can actually get some plausible models for sort of a pathogenic subunit of an aggregate, and then start building up more complex models from there. Certainly at the end stage, once you have the pathogenic isoform formed, you don't need copper anymore. You've now got a template that you can use to drive further misfolding, and copper is totally out of the equation at that point. But part of our hypothesis is some of this strain specificity that people talk about in prion diseases, the idea that there may be different beta sheet isoforms, in some of these cases, who knows, right? I mean, the underlying beta sheet structure in some strains could be related to an initial event induced by copper. So that copper binding event is going to encode a specific conformation in the resulting aggregates and fibrils. Now again, these are more likely to happen in sporadic cases of prion disease, particularly in cases where mutations that give rise to extra copies of these octa-repeats and you're predisposed to disease. But again, yeah, I mean, there's still tons of stuff to do as well.
So does that mean that you would have like a copper toxicity in the body? Either you have too little or too much copper?
There's certainly diseases known, copper toxicity diseases, probably the most popular or the most well-known, I guess, they're not popular, is Wilson's and Menke's disease. So that's copper overload or copper deficiency. One of the ideas, and that I'm kind of a fan of, because I'm interested in copper and metal binding to the prion protein, is that if the prion protein is really necessary for copper binding and copper binding is part of its function, is once disease has started and you have the prion protein misfolding into these pathogenic isoforms, part and parcel with that is going to be a loss of function of the cellular form of the prion protein. And if part of its function was copper binding, and that copper binding is important, you've lost all of that effect. It's certainly possible that if we start looking a little more closely, especially in some disease models, that copper homeostasis is most likely disrupted. Some of my other work, which is totally unrelated to the computational modeling, we're doing synchrotron-based X-ray fluorescence imaging. We do actually correlate changes in copper concentration and distribution in brain tissue with prion protein expression level. Now, we haven't looked at any diseased animals, but certainly whether we're looking at knockout mice, they definitely have less copper in specific regions of the brain. and compare those with mice that overexpress the prion protein, they've got big changes in copper distribution and much higher concentrations of copper, even where we would normally find copper. There's a lot more there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.